All right, welcome everybody. Thanks for coming. today's panel is called Can We Learn? And it's about using Wiimotes in education and e-learning. My panelists, we're going to be discussing some practical applications of education and some of the goals that we have in the e-learning industry. But before we get too much into it, I was wondering if we could see a show of hands. How many people here have a Nintendo Wii? Okay, all right. How many people here work in the e-learning industry or have worked? That's an interesting cross-section. All right. Well, cool. I just want to talk a little bit about how I came up with this idea because I also work for an e-learning company. My name's Patrick Sanchez, by the way. I work for Inspire Learning. And I was hanging around work one day and we were toying with some new simulations that we were working on. And some of the guys at work had brought in a Wii. It was the first time anybody could get one, and they're still hard to find. And they got a program called GlovePy. They hooked it up to their laptop, and they started using it to control some simulations we were working on at the time. And a little thought bubble came up over my head, and I said, wouldn't it be really cool if we could design a course specifically with this thing that would really leverage the features that it has? And I was like, well, that would be really, really cool. What could I do? I drew a blank. I couldn't really think of anything that would be really special, that would really use the Wiimote well. So, hence this panel. I got together these guys, and hopefully today we can hash out some interesting ideas on whether it would be practical or effective to use something like a Wiimote and other devices like it for educational purposes. So I want to introduce my panelists. I've got Chris Pittman here. He's a software developer from RFD Consultants. He was a chief architect on an award-winning simulation for leadership programs called Executive Challenge. And my other panelist is Brandon Carson from Sun Microsystems. He's a chief instructional designer. So hopefully today we should get some interesting topics. But before we do anything too technical or get too much into theory stuff, I want to bring up one slide, my only slide. It's not much of a slide. But basically, I just want to show you guys some of the basic components. You know, I'm going to adjust this real quick. Time out. What you see is just a couple of the components that's included with every Wiimote. Now, some of these you know, some of them you might not know. First of all, it's designed like a remote control. It's a very intuitive. Everyone knows how to use this thing. They pick it up, they point it at something. Another interesting thing about it is it has a motion sensor in it. And what that means is that it can sense motion on three axes, you know, up, down, left, right, and twist, X, Y, Z. That's pretty cool. It also has an infrared pointer sensor in it. And that's generally used, if you played the Wii before, as a sort of like the on-screen pointing device for generally navigating menus and stuff like that. It's a Bluetooth device, which is really cool. One of the reasons it's so popular. And there's six buttons. It's got 16 kilobytes of flash memory in it for storing details. It has a speaker on it. And it has rumble. And a couple LEDs. So there's a whole bunch of stuff in there that we could think about using. And I'm going to keep that up there for you guys. But before we get too technical, Brandon, earlier in our discussions when we were preparing for the panel, you'd mentioned some interesting points about the state of the e-learning industry today. Mm-hmm. Basically, you thought that there was a lot of things that just weren't being done right, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Right. I'm thinking that maybe I can give I can use Sun as an example of kind of the current state of e-learning in general. I was hired at Sun a year ago, and what we do is we produce hundreds of hours of training for internal and external audiences over the course of a year. The majority of what, when I came into Sun, I found out the majority of what's being designed are really narrated bullets.
Which are boring.
In a slide format, where at one extreme, the learner is a passive listener. On the other extreme, there's the potential for some clicking on the screen. And the engagement level really is sort of at the at at what I would define as the lowest engagement level you can have in an e-learning construct. Basically, I call it slide junk. That's what we're producing.
Yeah.
And so my charge when I was hired over the last year was to take a look at the measurement and evaluation of, hey, is what we're doing actually working? And I found out that most of it is actually not working. It's not tied close enough to performance outcomes or business outcomes. And so what came out of that research that I did, looking at the stuff we're producing, was an instructional model that I designed. And I designed it for what we're now calling collaborative learning, because that's where we're focused with our learners, is giving them some level of collaboration so that they can work together in a social and informal setting. Mm-hmm. But there's four behaviors that came out of this model that are desired participant behaviors, and those are attention, motivation, participation, and retention. Mm-hmm. So those are the four desired behaviors that I constructed in this model. And my primary focus as an instructional designer is learning games. That's kind of my niche, if you will. I like to design games. And in a good learning game design, those four behaviors are not too difficult to achieve in a good learning game design. Most game designers are able to seek those behaviors, if you will, through the immersive play of the game in a good design. What you basically look for is what's called the flow state. So how many of you are familiar with the flow state? Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi is a psychologist who espoused this theory. It's a tough name. I can't even spell it.
I can't say that three times.
But anyway, the flow state basically defines immersion in a total or a total immersion in an experience. And it basically outlines the fact that you can't be easily distracted from the experience you're in. And game designers seek that in their play design. And I read this interview, I think it was a couple of months ago, in Wired magazine by the guys who designed Halo, and they say that they design for 30 minutes of flow state at a time in their game designs. And I thought about that, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go for maybe 5 to 10 minutes of total flow state in a learning game, because I think that might be the most I can get based on the budgets I'm going to have. It's definitely not a Halo budget. And plus you're in a learning construct with adults, so it's right. It's a little different. But basically, when you enter the flow state, you're intrinsically motivated. That's what you need from your learners, is intrinsic motivation, where there's no external reward necessary. They're there because they want to be there. Bullets on a PowerPoint slide with a little narration just doesn't get them to that flow state. So when you called talking about this, and by the way, to set some construct, my first learning game design at Sun, the programmers and artists were Inspire Learning. So that's kind of the relationship we have. When you called about this topic, I got to thinking about that. And we have something at Sun. We create really expensive hardware devices. I don't know if any of you have any of them, or if your data centers may be running them if you're at a big company. But we have a need to train our partners and our employees on how to configure and troubleshoot these devices. Interestingly enough, training at Sun, we're revenue generated, but we only generate a couple hundred million dollars a year in revenue, which is not much in when you look at what Sun generates in revenue overall. So we're kind of like the bastard child at Sun, right? We don't get a lot of respect. And so even getting access to one of these hardware devices in a training environment is not easy. A lot of them are big and heavy anyway. So as e-learning designers, we're constantly seeking out ways to train people on how to configure and troubleshoot these devices. In the most realistic situation we can. And a lot of times we don't have access to them, the machines, in a training environment. So what do? We get images from marketing. We scan them. We render them in 3D, we put them in Flash, and we have a lot of clicking on them that you can do to figure things out on how to troubleshoot them. Okay, that's not bad. I mean, it's what a lot of people do now. But I'm really wanting to kind of move beyond that flat environment. And so we have this organization within Sun called Sun Labs. And they're doing a lot of research and development, and they've got a couple of things that are pretty cool right now that they've designed. One of them is called Project Darkstar, which is a synchronous gaming environment. And then another one is called Wonderland, which is a telepresence technology. And what I'm thinking we can do is, when you brought this idea up, it kind of spurred on some thinking in my mind, is that a lot of our customers, we're in the data center of a lot of big companies. Like, for instance, eBay is running all of our equipment. And eBay can't really go down for very long without getting a lot of
hate mail.
Yeah. So a lot of our techs and engineers need to be able to troubleshoot and configure these devices, quickly and know how to get to the problem right away. So I think a really good environment, immersive environment, we could use something like Wonderland and the Wiimote potentially to place our techs in the customer's data center and be able to virtually configure the device. So something like a Wiimote, you could learn how to remove cards, put cards in. You could exchange blades. You could take tops off of the machines.
Yeah,
a lot of things you could do.
Pick the stuff up.
Pick the stuff up.
In a 3D
exactly.
Model and actually
right.
interact with it as opposed to just clicking through some
right. but
buttons on
exactly.
slides.
And even in the construct of the customer's data center, which we could replicate, so that when the engineer is actually placed in the real data center, it's not going to be as much of a jolt to them. It's one thing if you have it in an e-learning environment on your screen, just the device itself, a simulation of it, or if you even have the luxury of having access to our systems in a training environment, that's one thing. But when you're at the customer's data center, there's a lot of psychological implications going on because they need their stuff dealt with like right away. It's business critical. So I'm thinking that might be a good application.
This is like the first idea you had, right?
This is the first idea I had. And yeah. Obviously, you know, we make a lot of hardware devices. We also do a lot of software stuff, but most of our pain in training right now is in getting transfer of information on these hardware devices to people so that they can really be there and help get the most out of the situation at the data center.
Yeah, so this brings me into another question I wanted to ask you guys. It seems to me that whenever I'm looking through e-learning centric blogs, people are very in the industry are very interested in different kinds of devices, different things, different environments. For example, Second Life was all the rage last year. It seemed like in e-learning, and I couldn't stop hearing about it. What do you think it is about people who are involved in e-learning that makes them really interested in finding new ways to get the learners to interact with the computer and with software?
We actually have a pretty decent presence in Second Life. We're exploring it. We've spent we have a couple islands, and we actually have one dedicated to just employees. We were going to do a lot of employee training in it. We're not 100% convinced yet that environment will work, only because of the cognitive overload necessary just to get to our island. You know,
yeah.
But we've actually ported. You know, we got the API. We actually got it working on Solaris, except for audio. But so we've done a lot of work with it. There's a lot of promise with it, we think. But it really goes back to what I was talking about earlier on immersion, and I think that. I told my boss the other day, I said, you know, if we just stopped doing half of what we're doing right now, just stopped, I don't think anyone would even notice, you know. And then
right.
if we focus those resources on exploring more of the new technology options that are coming out, like the Wiimote or metaverse environments or more immersive experiences like that, we could probably get a better ROI. It's basically going to be down to relevance and credibility with your audience. And if you can design experiences that go to those two areas, then you're going to get them to learn more.
Right. So I would think that when I'm thinking about this, I think, first of all, fun. I mean, I think that, you know, interacting with something, interacting with a course or a software program with the Wiimote is fun. It gets you to stand up. It gets you to move around. I guess it's also part of the immersion thing. Part of
yeah, I think so.
Heightened emotion, you know, that's something that can enhance.
Yeah. Anytime you heighten someone's emotion, you're going to get some kind of feedback. But for instance, when I told you earlier how our 3D guy renders the device, he built an application that you use your mouse and you can click on the toolbox, which you click on a screwdriver, and then all of a sudden your cursor becomes the screwdriver, and you can use the screwdriver to take the top of the device off. but you really just kind of move, you know, it's just a cursor that you didn't move to the top and you click. Okay, that's fine because it's the idea of what's going on, not necessarily just screwing the Phillips, you know. But would it be more realistic, and would it be more, would there be more ROI if I'm using the Wiimote, the guy's actually unscrewing the top and there's actually some resistance to the screw like there would be on a real device,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
That I'm always striving for realism, right? It's just what degree of realism do you need to go to,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
So I think it's worthy of looking into that, definitely.
Right. One question I want to ask is, I see a lot of efforts towards making games and enjoyable simulations, multiplayer team simulations like Executive Challenge. But one question that always pops into my mind is it okay to make e-learning fun? I mean, what value is there in that?
Yeah, why wouldn't there be?
Right.
If something is fun, people are more likely to do it. I really don't think it's more complex than that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think it should be fun. I think play is an innate human behavior anyway. It's innate to us. We like to play, period. Mm. But I had this funny story. I was doing this. You know, we did the games that you guys did for us.
Right.
We worked on these games, and they're learning games, and they're actually publicly available. You can go play these games on learning.sun.com/newhire. And it's a series of onboarding games that teaches new hires about Sun's businesses. And so you go to it's a wiki site, and you go to the site, and there's a tab called Play, and then you go there to play the games. So I was doing this observable usability test the other day, and you got to understand Sun's going to have some pretty hardcore, geeky kind of people come work there, right? So you're going to get all sorts of different types. There was an engineer in one of the observations I was doing, and I asked him if he played the game afterwards, and he's like, no, I didn't go to the play tab because I don't come to work to play. He's like, I think my kid would want to do that. And I'm like, wow, to work to play. That would be the only reason I'd want to come to work is to play.
That's the kind of person I was thinking of. People who react negatively when you try and propose an idea.
Right, you're going to have that.
I mean, my dad, mainly.
Yeah. But it's just, I found that very interesting because I think that, all the information in that game, it's also in slide junk. So it's available to you if you really like narrated bullets.
Yeah.
You can have access
to it.
Or
you can just go Google it.
Right.
Right.
Right. Exactly. So we do want to design to, you know, the needs of our audience. And there are a lot of people that just really want the information. Maybe they don't want to go into the immersive play experience and spend some time figuring things out or, you know, picking up the device. Maybe they just want the job aid on the 5 steps necessary to unscrew the top of it or whatever.
Right.
Right.
Oh,
that's always going to happen.
Sure. And as a technician myself, I mean, that's generally the very first thing I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting, but I want to kind of keep us on topic a little bit and maybe discuss some of the technical aspects of the Wiimote, hopefully to give us a better idea of what kind of applications we could create with it that we can't. So first of all, what many of you probably don't know is there's already an enormous community of people who are using the Wiimote for applications far outside the Wii itself. They're hooking it up to existing applications, you know, as a substitute for the mouse and for the keyboard. I've seen people use it in Second Life. I've seen people use it just to navigate through Windows, you know, as a pointer device. A colleague of mine recently used it in a presentation as his, you know, faux laser pointer, which is pretty cool. And if you Google this thing, you'll find a million sites of communities hacking this stuff.
WiiBrew is a good site that collects a lot of those. WiiBrew.
Right. I was wondering if we could talk about why this has been so popular. I mean, I can't remember any other input device, controller, game controller, anything that's had this much excitement around it.
I think there's three things. Number one, the Wii has some cachet as a game console right now. I think probably more than any of the other two competing game consoles it's competing against right now.
Mm.
So, I mean, people want to kind of get in there and it's cool. Number two, there's a lot of functionality packed into this thing. And if there's not, there's an expansion port on the bottom. So you can build something else and plug it into that. So you have a lot of options to play with. Number three, all of this is completely open. Like, I have both a Wii and an Xbox 360 at home. I would love to hack the Xbox 360. I can't because the wireless is completely Microsoft proprietary, and I honestly don't care enough to reverse engineer it. This uses Bluetooth. It uses pretty standard infrared technology. It uses straight up, you know, bog standard flash memory. The infrastructure I need to start hacking with this is already there.
Right. And they're also relatively cheap. I mean, they are $40, but, you know, you can walk in any store and just buy one of these things, right?
If you're lucky.
Right. I remember when I first got mine, I drove all around town trying to pick up extra controllers, and there weren't any for the longest time. So, yeah, I mean, if you were going to try and hack something like an Xbox 360 controller, say if you wanted to, you'd have to do an extensive amount of engineering. But with these things, they're Bluetooth. And you can get any standard Windows or Linux or Mac. I've seen all three used. You can get you can get the Wiimote working on all of those platforms, and that's probably the barrier to entry is very low, right? I mean, you don't need to be an engineer and create any sort of, you know, little breadboard and little circuit to interface with this thing or write any code really, because you can just detect the thing as a Bluetooth device, open up an interpreter program like GlovePy or PyGlove. Love Pi, and write a simple script to map any of the devices to something on your platform. So I think that pretty much explains why it has been so popular. Do you guys think that, though, yeah, you've played Wii Sports, both of you have, do you think there's anything to be said for pantomiming in action in order to learn it? Like, for example, is swatting the Wiimote going to help you use a tennis racket? Yeah,
I mean, yeah. I don't know. Does guitar? You know, using the Guitar Hero thing really? I had a guitarist friend of mine that couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's the same question, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, I think accuracy is important, obviously, and you know, especially if you look at any kind of medical training, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or like your friend noted on the laparoscopic procedures. Mm-hmm. Accuracy would be very important, probably more so in that construct than the hardware device kind of stuff that I was, you know, talking about. And also, it would be nice if you're going to go that far with that type of environment, that you could somehow simulate torque and things like that. That would be nice if you could get that back. But
right. Now, as far as I know, the Wiimote, I mean, it's a great idea, but it does seem to have some weaknesses. In that respect, it's not terribly sensitive. There's also a lot of noise in it. If you hook it up and you move it around, you'll notice it jitters a whole lot. It would take a little bit of work and some clever programming to implement this in a useful way, I think.
I'll give you two examples from my playing around with the Wii. Number one, one of the games in Wii Sports is Wii Golf. When I first started out, I started out in the classic golf stance, you know, head down, putting like this. And I got tired of that really quick because I wanted to sit on the couch because I'm lazy. So I figured out that it was not really responding to anything other than the fact that this was moving through an arc. There's just a simple accelerometer in here. So the play style that I eventually evolved for Wii Golf was sitting slouched on the couch and doing this. It doesn't care that I'm not swinging in a downward arc. I can do this just fine. And actually, I have better control like this. So if you see me playing this without seeing what I'm playing, you don't think golf is the sport that I'm playing. You think I'm fly fishing. So if I were to go out on a golf course, I'm not any more prepared now. I don't have the stance. I don't have the control over the weight of the club.
Yeah, and I think that the Nintendo developers did an amazing job of coding for that and finding a way to make it an intuitive control for a lot of the games. But you can kind of see through the curtain if you start to play with it a little bit and find out that, hey, wait a minute, this thing isn't as smart as I think it is. You pick it up and all of a sudden you assume it's a lot more intelligent than it really is, but it's really just maybe tracking one axis or something like that. And that's something to consider when you're going to create an application for education. You know, apply this to anything else. You may have to do a little bit of massaging of the data in order to achieve the results you're looking for. When I think about this, I think about some of the other controllers that have been coming out. I mean, it seems first we had the Wii, you know, totally revolutionary input device, and then all of a sudden, it was Guitar Hero first, exploded, then Rock Band, and now all these, my living room is completely cluttered with all these plastic devices, little toy guitars, little drum sets, little Wiis. Do you think that any of these other controllers show any promise for doing anything? I mean, the first thing I think of is the drums in Rock Band. I mean, you could actually teach somebody rudimentary drumming with that thing.
But could you teach somebody surgery? I mean, I love Rock Band. I love Guitar Hero. They're some of my favorite games that have come out recently. But the controllers are very specific to that. Mm, and yeah. That makes them great games. But, I mean, the thing about the Wii is that it's a very general control interface. Mm-hmm. I don't know of any other game controllers that have come out that have the same generality that the Wii does. And, I mean, there is a Guitar Hero for the Wii. And all it is just a guitar shell that this snaps into. I mean, I think that if you can play Guitar Hero, unless you can do anything.
Right. Well, one thing I do like about the Rock Band stuff is that they are, for the 360, they are standard USB devices, which is kind of cool. So although the wireless controllers are some proprietary technology, you're not going to mess with those. They're just standard joysticks and buttons anyway. There's nothing really there to take advantage of. And you could find off-the-shelf stuff to work with your applications if you wanted to. But what's cool about those is they're just standard joysticks. You can plug them into anything, and you can use them to do things. But, yeah, you're right. They are more specific and wouldn't be as flexible as something like the Wiimote. The Wiimote can be a mouse. It can be a whole bunch of different things. Can you guys think of anything? Earlier in the month, I sent around a bunch of links to some different applications. There haven't been a whole lot of e-learning applications that I've read about so far. When I first proposed this panel, there was hardly any press coverage about alternative uses. But since then, there's been a whole bunch of stuff, mainly in physical therapy and some science, some medical usage, and only one e-learning application that I found, which, interestingly enough, was done for Orkin. And what it is they use it to simulate moisture detection, I guess mainly pesticide, insect reduction, whatever they call that. But I thought that was pretty cool. And now there is an actual concrete case of somebody using this for e-learning, which is great. Can you guys think of any bad ideas or anything that this really couldn't be applied to? Like,
couldn't or shouldn't?
Shouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not convinced the thing that kind of interests me about it is like going back to that whole immersion state, because when I'm doing Guitar Hero, you know, I'm kind of just completely immersed into it, and, you know, my mouth hanging open and I'm kind of drooling, but I'm really into the experience there and moving my, you know, hands, simulating that. So I think that the strength of that, but then you have to look at kind of like what I was talking about earlier, if it's what kind of procedure or what kind of performance are you looking for from a learning construct? What's really important, right? So if it is accuracy in movement or accuracy in performing a task, I could see moving beyond the mouse and using, you know, some kind of device like that. But if the shape of the Wiimote or the shape of the device or the non-accuracy kind of becomes a barrier or doesn't simulate properly, then what are you doing? You know, what are you doing to your audience? Right.
Well, one of the applications that I saw was a medical test, and what they'd done was they got these surgeons to practice with a game called Marble Madness, Marble Mania. Basically, just it's like those games you hold the boxes where you have to kind of rotate it and get the balls to go through a little maze and into the hole kind of thing. Well, the idea was they would play this game. They would have one group play it, another group just go right into a surgery simulation, and the people who played Marble Mania beforehand all did better than the other group, And I found that really strange. And they tried another game. I forget what it was, but it was some other completely different kind of game, and it had no effect. But Marble Mania, these surgeons were a hell of a lot better. So, you know, my takeaway from that was that's a dexterity exercise, I suppose. So, you know, maybe you don't need something that, you know, simulates it one-to-one. You know, because people keep talking about this on the Nintendo Wii forums and things like that. One of the most anticipated games for the Wii is something that would be a sword fighting game, like a lightsaber Jedi kind of game. But a lot of the fanboys are not really excited about that because they're like, it won't be one-to-one. It won't actually map everything that you're doing with your hand. And so how could you have a real sword fight with that? And that was an interesting idea, though, because I'm thinking, you know, a lot of the ideas I've been thinking about, maybe I really couldn't do them with this stuff.
Up until about 6 months ago, if I had been asked this question, my answer would have been that the Wiimote would have been a horrible choice for drill and practice math. Because you don't really gain anything from adding this to, you know, okay, you can draw the form, but does that really help? And I became pretty convinced of my answer. And then Nintendo made a game called Big Brain Academy, which was, among other things, that. And they sold 2 million copies of it. So now I'm not sure anymore.
Right. It doesn't always have to be a simulation that mimics something in real life, whether it's, you know, hitting a baseball fencing or... My first idea, and this is really lame, but just to give you an idea of how lame my first idea was, it was to teach people semaphore, which is basically you use these little flags to communicate with letters. I mean, that's all I could think of. Yeah, two emotes, A, B, C, whatever. But, you know, because that's how my brain was thinking. I was thinking something that works exactly like it does in the real world. But that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. In fact, one of the other articles I read about another application was in science and chemistry. And what these people were doing was they were using a Wii in front of a big screen to interact with large molecules and move them around, rotate them, and actually move individual atoms around, things like that. Something that's, you know, totally not possible in the real world, but gave them insight into, I guess, the structure of the molecules themselves. So I guess that there, you know, what do you guys think? There's a lot of different ways to approach the problem with the Wiimote.
Yeah, I think a lot of, like, when I was looking at what we're doing in Second Life, and I came to this. I looked at our islands, and you know that the person that was running the Second Life program was really excited because of the Sun Pavilion that she had built, and it dawned on me that I'm like, you're reconstructing like buildings in Second Life that look like our physical buildings, and I'm like, what makes the Second Life experience uniquely Second Life? Do it. And then I thought, well, I think in the constructivist period, humans have to rebuild what they know because they don't yet know what Second Life is or what it will be or what it can be. So instead, we're just kind of recreating the physical world in a virtual world and calling that cool. And I think some of your earlier question about why, as instructional designers, we need to look at new technologies, we need to explore them and find out, can they really solve the ultimate problem? And in corporate training or adult training, you know, the problem is usually practical. You know, we need to teach them how to do something or how to think about something in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, this is pretty kind of out there right now because it's like, okay, why move beyond the mouse? Like, you know, why go that way? Right. And then what overload is necessary, you know, from a cognitive standpoint, on moving to that versus just using a mouse to do it. So, you know, what is the ROI on that? And I think that's what we should explore. Mm-hmm. Just like we're trying to explore that in the metaverse environments. You know, why would we want to go and do that? And why is it necessary? And the first thing we ran in Second Life was kind of a disaster because people couldn't do, you know, they couldn't get over the technology, you know, the 80 megabyte download or something to begin with. And then you got to create your avatar. Then you got to learn how to fly. Then you got to find our island. Then you got to go there and figure out how to sit down. And then, oh, you get to look at a PowerPoint slide in Second Life. It was a disaster, you know, that was $300,000 disaster. So I think that, but it is our job. And that's what my job is to look at these types of things and go, what business problem will this solve?
Right.
And that's kind of where we're at with it, I think.
Right. Well, one of my favorite things about at least Wii games as they are right now is that because it kind of encourages you to maybe stand up and move around a little bit, it also in a game where there's multiple people gets people to stand up with each other and sort of interact with each other, sometimes involuntarily. Sometimes you get punched in the face or something like that because people are just gesticulating wildly. But do you guys think that they're... That would be something useful for e-learning applications and getting people maybe stand up or, you know, something like that?
Yeah, one of the, a simulation game that I wrote about a year and a half ago was to teach people Six Sigma. Six Sigma is a process by which businesses can go through and progressively identify the reasons why their business sucks and how to fix it. They'll tell it to you in different terms, but that's what it is. So our game was a multiplayer game. People played it sitting within physical proximity of each other so that they could talk. But it was a simple, just sort of client server, you know, game that was played over the web. If you've ever been to a LAN party, it would have looked very familiar. Players would go through and pick problems that they wanted to work on. Some problems were problems that you could not fix yourself. You needed help from some other department represented by a different player. You know, maybe you needed to get them to give you information in a different way. So the way that we implemented that was, you know, player A would try to solve a problem. Player B would get a pop-up window saying, hey, player A needs your help to fix problem so-and-so. Do you want to help them? Yes, no. And what we were hoping and what we saw in our initial playtests was that people would have a conversation about that, because choosing to collaborate is not always the right answer. You could, you should be able to say, this is a minimal benefit for you and an extreme cost for me, therefore I'm not going to do it. In practice, we never really saw people having those conversations. People, it was far too easy just to say, you know, click yes or no and get on with your life. If I were rewriting that now, what I would seriously consider would be to give every participant a Wiimote, and when they ask to collaborate with something, load a token that represents that collaboration request into the flash memory and make them take it over to somebody's other station and say, zap, here's the thing I want you to work on with me. You know, some information there. Let's talk about it. And then if they say, yeah, if the second player says yes, they choose something and they go about their day. I can't force people to have a meaningful conversation, but at least I could force them to get within 30 feet of each other. And I'm hoping that's good enough. So, I mean, I think that's one thing where this would help. And here's the interesting thing to it to me. It doesn't rely on the fact that this is a pointer at all. It doesn't rely on any of the fact that it's a gyroscopic tilt controller, et cetera. It's a memory card with a Bluetooth adapter attached. That's all I would be using it for.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, you're just leveraging the wireless capability and the memory storage capability of it. Yeah, that's cool. You can also make the speaker go, weep.
Yeah. Don't think of it as just a pointer device, because it's got a lot of other stuff attached to it. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So if any of y'all are interested in and actually using a Wiimote and maybe plugging it in with some applications, I've mentioned GlovePy already, which runs on Windows, I know. And I know there's other applications out there for Linux and Mac. What you can do with this program is set up a very simple script which maps the controls of the Wiimote to anything in your environment, whether it's cursors, mice, things like that. And I've also seen recently Opera released a special, I think it was like an SDK for their Wii browser. There's a browser available for the Wii that Opera wrote for them. And what this does is expose functionality of, I think, the motion sensor.
Yeah, there's actually two different ones. There's a JavaScript API that's built into Opera that exposes not the motion sensor, but it gives you access to the buttons, the D-pad, and the position of the pointer on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a separate Flash API called WiiCade that is trying to, I don't remember if they're there yet or not, but it's trying to expose the full functionality, tilt control and gyroscopic control and everything.
Oh, really? Okay. Do you know what it's called? Open Source Flash. Okay. All right. So what he's saying basically is that there's a wonderful set of code for doing Flash programs that can hook directly with the Wii. That's really great, because that's the majority of the e-learning applications that I've seen are Flash driven. But what I've got up here on screen is just a very simple example. So Chris sent this to me a couple weeks ago. He wrote a very simple program that interfaces with the Wii. And I thought this was really interesting, because it looks...
You may need to crank the font size up a bit if you can.
Okay, let me see if I can do it. It's very short. What does it do, Chris?
This is my one of my early attempts to write a drawing program. in using the Wii. This uses the JavaScript API that Opera uses. I'm not doing anything really mind-blowing here. A lot of this is just pasted together from sample code on Opera's site. But the idea is that you point at an area of the screen, you press the A, you draw what you want, and then you let go. And it just draws a thing. It's not Photoshop. You can draw in one color, which is red. You can draw using one brush, which is a rectangle of a fixed size. But
sorry, I'm just trying to resize it there a little bit.
You broke it.
Well, what struck me about this piece of code is just how short and simple it was.
There's, as you can see, there's one function called update Wii. You can pull the Wiimote at whatever interval you want and get back a JavaScript object that represents the state of the Wiimote. Here, that's a K-pad status. If you scroll down to the bottom, Patrick, the one real HTML tag I have here is a canvas tag. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, canvas tag is becoming a near standard for doing sort of freeform drawing in an HTML page. So now if you scroll back up to the top, sorry. So I take this, basically I read a whole bunch of values describing X and Y positions and the role axis. And I load them into JavaScript variables. And if the A button is pressed, that's this big button up here on the top, I find the canvas on the page. I figure out the size that I want to draw, and that depends on kpad status.dpd distance, which is the distance from the screen, so that you can make your brush larger by pushing the Wiimote closer to the screen. And then I call fill rect, which draws a rectangle.
So it's fairly simple, and right there you've got a program that you could just point at the screen and paint some stuff. What I thought was cool about this is that, I mean, right away you could develop a very simple program that you could deploy via the web and that any web browser would be able to access. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I thought this might be a good time to go ahead and ask the audience if you guys have any questions. If you do, there's a mic over here on the side. Anybody? Would you mind stepping over to the mic for us?
They're podcasting it, that's why.
Sure. Hi, how are you? My name's Stephen Harms. I work for Cisco Systems. I design a lot of our collaboration and virtual teaming technologies. And we don't have Wiimotes on every desk just yet, but my sort of sideways passion is modeling linguistic behaviors and teaching people how to acquire second and third languages. And I was thinking something like most romance languages follow patterns where you basically take a root and you chop off the ending and then you grab from the bucket of appropriates and you place it there. And then what you could do is you could run the algorithm and say, based on what you've chopped, what you've pulled, and what in the bucket that you've poured into this sort of blender, your results would be this. Do these sound like the words? And you know, maybe you could say, you know, pronounce this one, pronounce that one. And say, well, wait, no, you know, maestra, she didn't say, some bristle. She said sombrero. And you could hear it and you could kind of interact with it. Because so much of linguistics is in our head, it'd be interesting to try to see if you could actually teach muscle memory or different parts of the brain, a different way to kind of learn that behavior. Mm-hmm. So that was just an idea that I had while I was sitting here about a different type of learning application.
Mm. Great.
I like that idea. That's really cool. It's way better than mine.
That almost kind of reminds me of is it
yeah, right.
Is it Montessori schools that have the teach math using the colored blocks of various lengths, like mm-hmm. you have like a block that's 7 units long mm-hmm. and a block that's 2 units long, and you can put them together and see that it's 9 units long, and you can use your kinesthetic learning mm-hmm. in order to learn math. That actually sounds really similar to that. I would love to play that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, do you have a question?
Yeah, it's not really a question. I just wondered if you'd seen the guy, Johnny Chung Lee, on YouTube with the hacks that he's done with the Wii.
I would love to talk about Johnny Wii. He blows my mind. And I can't really think of too many applications to make out of his crazy stuff. But just for those of you who haven't seen it, this guy has a lot of time on his hands, it looks like to me. But what he's done, he's just flipped the Wiimote on its butt. Basically, he puts a Wiimote on a television, and he puts the sensor bar on his glasses. He made like little glasses with little infrared emitters on it. And he wrote a head tracking program. And what that is he had sort of a model of a stadium, like a big football stadium, in the screen. And when he moved his head around like this, his perspective would change as if he was looking through a window that looked out on the stadium. And I thought that was really cool because it was very convincing. And his very well done YouTube videos, he's got a camera mounted with it, and you can actually see what the perspective looks like if, you know, from a first person point of view. And man, I thought that was totally cool.
It's
an alarming. It's coming out at an alarming rate. All these cool hacks.
The way that works is that there's a if I'm thinking of the same thing you're thinking of is there's a sensor bar that you put on either on top of or underneath your TV that has two LEDs on either side. But you can use any light source. People have used two candles and had it work fine. So there's a little bit of a triangulation going on with this sensor here. So the ones that I've seen like that, people actually put infrared reflective tape on things and use that same hardware to track the positions of objects in the real world. So you can point at things and have it respond to that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Exactly. That would be really effective, I think, yeah.
One of the problems, though, that I saw on a forum is people were complaining about how the Wii doesn't really know where it is in space. It's just guessing most of the time. And I saw this great presentation by a German fellow whose name I can't remember right now. But what he'd done is he'd created his own special 4 LED sensor bar. And he wrote his own tracking software for it. And with 4 sensors or 4 LED, 4 points in space, you can tell once you've calibrated it where the Wii is in space. And I thought that was really, really interesting. I mean, it's already a vast improvement over the original, and the design was very simple.
There was a little bit of speculative generality going on there, I think, because the Wii actually has hardware support, I think, for that 4 sensor thing, and Nintendo decided not to do it. So I'm wondering what other secrets are locked away here.
Yeah. No, definitely. And Johnny Lee did another. Well, I think his first hack was a multi-touch whiteboard display. Do you know how that worked? Because
if I remember correctly, that was the infrared finger tape thing.
But okay. So basically, what it looked like is, you know, he would have a projection up on a board. And
oh, I remember that one. He had a pen with an infrared LED on the end of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And with that, he could basically...
with that, he could trace out a shape in 3D and have the Wii respond to it.
Yeah, I thought that was really good. And with two at a time, I thought is what it was, too. It was like a multi-touch display. Yeah. Guys like Johnny Lee, this other German fellow whose name escapes me now, these guys are just constantly creating new ways to use the same exact device, which I thought was really, really exciting. I'm sorry, sir. You had a question?
No, I actually want to go ahead and continue with your same idea. And I think we all three saw the same hack or the story where they put the reflective tape on that. That just actually brings me back to Carson's earlier point of having the individual train to take out the blades or be prepared mm-hmm. for that. And okay, so follow me. The idea is like, what's the future? Okay, do we need baseball gloves? Have we got these sensors on them? And then actually, how close are we now to virtual reality that you're there? And then is Nintendo going to come out with its own virtual gloves that you can have? And then we can be able to play baseball. And then it can sense how tough I'm squeezing it, how tough I'm squeezing that, the screwdriver. And then what's my resistivity? That ends up being the issue. Do you want it to create some kind of reverse torque? That ends up being the idea. But when you said that, bringing that all to a culmination, that's how you can have that get trained. Like, I need to go over here, so I'm going to pull myself in this direction, and it goes to focus. I'm doing some work at USAA in instructional design, and I have a buddy that's designing training essentially for this environment for the management to be able to deal with managers and deal with people, and it shows them walking around on campus. But we're not quite at this point using the Wii, but I thought that was interesting, and that brought this full circle. But I'm curious to know, where do you think we're going to go now with virtual reality? Or is this, or are we there?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's interesting. I got one of the Kindles the other day, and I have a couple of those Sony ebook readers, and because I read a lot, and I'm like thinking, okay, this is going to be great because it's electronic, and I can take 100 books with me on the airplane and all that. But I'm like, that nasty feeling of not turning a page just kind of bothers me. You know, that tactile feeling of paper. So I think that, you know, when I'm coming up with these ideas for hardware training with this, I think that there's a lot we can do to simulate that environment, but, you know, it's that authenticity spectrum thing. The best thing to do is really have the device next to you. I mean, nothing's ever going to replicate that. And when do we create the devices that actually block? You know, we go so far with it that we're blocking, you know, the glove is actually becoming more of a problem to get it to work right or something than the training going on. So there is that danger area you get into where it's just, really makes more sense to fly the guy to a data center and just let him, you know. So I'm with you on that, getting into the as much reality in the simulation as possible until the authenticity spectrum gets so far removed from what they really need to learn as opposed to what the technology is kind of forcing, you know, in their movements and stuff. So it's a delicate balance I think we'll find ourselves in. Mm-hmm.
You have a question?
So yeah, like kind of question, sort of something to add to the discussion. I was thinking also, like, from my past, I used to play with an NDS a lot just because it was touch-based and that sort of thing. And it was like a couple of games, like there was a medical game on there that was really cool. And that taught me a lot. And then thinking about like Dynadash as a game,
Dynadash,
how amazing is it that something that's like you wouldn't actually want to do that job for real? But you want to sit there for hours playing this game where you've got to like get people to tables and sort of triage customers as they come into your diner and make sure that you serve them correctly, yet we're willing to sit there and play this thing. So that's just kind of interesting there. So then when the Wii came out, I got like Cooking Mama, for example.
Yeah.
And so whilst it didn't really teach me how to cook, which I'm a bit disappointed because I don't really know how to cook too well, there's just like a whole bunch of different gestures that you could really teach people if you spent the time learning it, like, and thinking about it a bit differently. Because like something that I had to ring a friend about recently was like how you separate the white from a yolk in an egg, which they could have taught me in Cooking Mama had they got a bit creative with the interface. So it's just a bit interesting there, like how you can approach things from a few different angles to actually really get people learning. But then I guess you also have to balance how much fun they're having, especially with the game.
Yeah,
you always have to do that in the game anyways, balance the fun versus the learning. And that's the hard design of it. But, you know, the cool thing about that kind of situation is it's kind of a safe environment. So I remember when I was trying to learn how to chop onions and I cut my finger, right? So you could possibly have some of that there where you cut your finger there and maybe you can learn how to do it the right way and not cut your finger in the real world.
I would really like a learning. I would really like a program that would teach me how to cook, though. So, yeah. If anybody out there is thinking about doing that, please.
I think one of the nice things about that is that one of the things that I try to build in D-learning games is to allow the player to have fun making mistakes so that they remember the mistake more. The very first time I tried to make Thai food, I mixed up salt and sugar in the wrong proportions, and it came out horrible, of course. And you know, I was making this dish for, you know, a couple of my friends, and we all had a good laugh about it. And I always I learned a trick for, you know, getting my setup so that I wouldn't make that mistake in the future. If I hadn't had that sort of embarrassment / fun factor of making that mistake and publicly and looking like a little bit of an idiot, I don't think I would have discovered that.
Yeah.
And this, I mean, having to pick up a physical device and wave it around and look like a little bit of a dork, I think.
I wonder if it can play any role in the gender specificity problems too that we have with games, because the game we created two games, and what we found is we had Inspire create two games for us that were doing kind of the same thing, but we created two different game environments. One was kind of a story-based click-through adventure game, and one's a arcade-style action game. They're teaching the same things, but we have found that females are playing the click-through adventure game. They're not playing the arcade-style action game. And, of course, all the males are usually playing the arcade-style game.
Right.
So we're finding an interesting gender gap in how they're coming to the games.
Right.
Although there's not that many female engineers at Sun anyway that are playing games, but it's kind of been an interesting exposure of what we need to look at when we're designing games, period. But I wonder if, you know, like you're talking about cooking and stuff, I mean, that definitely might apply more towards going towards gender specificity, and I wonder if that could have any impact in that, I don't know, using the Wiimote.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that struck me about the Wii when it first came out, is all my friends wanted to play it because...
Yeah, and the senior citizens are all over it, you know, they're really getting up and moving around.
Yeah, my mom kicks my ass in baseball. She never played it ever, and she was a home run. My brother and I were just like, okay. So, I mean, it's because everyone's approaching this from the same time and the same experience. I mean, I've been playing first-person shooters with joysticks and whatever forever. No one's going to touch me if they're just starting today. But with this thing, it kind of levels the playing field. That we all, you know, interact with the world with our hands. We all look at things pretty much the same way. Right. It seems to, you know, be a more natural interface as well. A question?
It's not really a question so much as a suggestion for anybody in this room has ever discovered or explored organic chemistry and synthesis, and you understand that it's an incredibly theoretical and visual thing to figure out. So in any sense, when you're actually you're basically reverse engineering from reagents how to arrive at a certain product, that this is a perfect application for something like a Wiimote. And you're talking a lot about, you know, correspondence and actually physically, learning to physically move things like blades around. It seems to me that the introduction of a wand is perfect for academic areas like organic chemistry.
Yeah, my background is actually in astrophysics. And when you get to, you can always walk into a college physics library and pick out the people who are studying electromagnetism, because they're the ones who are sitting there doing this. It's a very physical thing. I mean, you're trying to imagine fields in three dimensions which are changing over time. And that's not something you've probably ever really had to do before. It takes some visualization tricks to do it. I would have killed to have something using something like this where I could actually, you know, grab a wire and pull it out and watch the fields change.
Yeah. All right, do we have any other questions or comments?
I just want to say one more thing. I remember being, I think, 12 it was, the year the Nintendo Power Glove came out, and that was the biggest pile of
it's
junk.
So bad.
It's a whole new realm of pain. But here we are, we're talking about Nintendo, who's given us yet another product.
Another glove. Yeah.
Three things draping on the side of your screen. Granted, it's not, you know, matched wood oak on the outside to match my friend's parents' shag carpet, but here we are, lo and behold, again, thinking all the same things that we thought, you know, is this going to open up virtual reality? We'll be able to grab things.
Yeah.
But it looks like maybe the technology has given us a substantial boost since the Batman 1 era.
Yeah.
And maybe we're going to get a chance to have another run at those ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for $40 a pop, you can start messing with this thing right away. And Nintendo has done a really good job of innovating, Power Glove aside. And who knows? I'm really curious about what they're going to come out with next. I mean, they've got to be looking at what these guys are doing and say, this is really cool. I bet we can make one of those and sell all this stuff over again next year, right? So do we have any other questions or comments? Okay, I think that just about does it for us. Oh, here we go.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, like, if you do make a cool little program that teaches people how to take down racks, just make it fun and I'll play as well.
Yeah, me too.
So, I agree.
Yeah.
I was telling him earlier when he first mentioned that it could be like Operation. So when you're reaching in to grab the little riser cards out.
Congratulations, you just destroyed $1 million sand.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
get the rumble going.
Yeah, I thought that would be awesome. All right, I think we're running out of time, so I just want to thank all of you guys for coming out, and especially my panelists, Chris and Brandon. It was fun. Thank you very much.
Thank you.